So the question becomes then, is the debate more valuable with more people? I would say it does. It makes the conversation more interesting, especially with the number of movies we have this year in terms of what is and isn't a best picture. I think this year's nominees have a very good mix overall. And again, maybe Silence and one or two other things you can make an argument for. They could have gotten a nomination as well. But I don't think anyone's displeased the nominees for Best Picture this year.
Hi, and welcome to Episode Cine Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And this is Will Clayton.
And we're here for an Oscar episode. This Oscars has been kind of crazy, it feels like. Like, it feels like everyone knows who's going to win most of the time right now. But I know there's been a lot of articles coming out about how everyone's, like, everything. It's becoming more serious than it has been most years. But first off, Will, what have you been watching?
Of late, the last thing I think I've watched in theaters, I went to go see John Wick 2. I enjoyed it greatly. I think I mentioned it in some of our group messages after I went to watch the movie, but it's almost, for me, like what I would like Pirates of the Caribbean to be in terms of, you know, you have these standalone films that tell their own story but then expand on their broader franchise. Mm-hmm. So to me, John Wick reminds me a lot of sort of that Pirates franchise, but for adults with a hard R action franchise. And so I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves is kind of, because I haven't seen John Wick 2. I loved the first one. Keanu's like slowly starting to have a comeback, it feels like, with John Wick, with the John Wick series, because he's doing one movie with Jason Momoa, I think, coming out soon. And then there's always the talk of Bill and Ted 3.
Yeah,
which is, I think he's talked about, and then he has a few movies coming out this year, actually. But yeah, so I watched recently, I've been watching a lot of movies recently, like, which is usually the case. I actually haven't been to the theater in a while, which is really crazy. I usually like go constantly, but I don't think I've been to a movie, like a mainstream released film in like a month and a half, it feels like.
Right.
I've been going to movies at the New Art near where I work at Cinephile, and I saw The Red Turtle that's nominated for Best Animated Feature. The thing I saw recently was the Oscar shorts. I haven't seen all the animated stuff yet, but I've seen the live action ones. Some good films. There's one really great one that I liked called Sing, and it's from, I think, Hungary, and a great little film. I think that's like my prediction for what will win best live action short, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Really well made. Yeah, really well made. And then I saw a few of the animated stuff because we were able to get in to see a few of them, and I hope to see a few or more of them this week. It was one that was called, I think, Pure Cider and Cigarettes, and it had great animation, but it was a very long movie, and I wish it was shorter. It was like 35 minutes long, and it was a short, and it felt like it was a cool, this great design to it. It felt like a comic book. It had this like graphic novel style of drawing to it, and I'm like, this is really cool, and then it felt like it kept hitting repetitive notes, like story beats. I'm like, okay, this looks like a film, like a noir comic, but it's like missing the noir content in a way. And it's nominated for the best. I think there was actually one they showed, because the movie, it's like a hard R, well, not hard R, but it's an R-rated animated short, basically. So at the theater, they had to put like a warning label beforehand of like, hey, the last short of the Oscar nominated shorts will be a R-rated movie. Please, if you do not want your kids to hear what's about to be said, like, we need you to leave when that one happens. And so what they did was they showed a few shorts that weren't nominated for the Oscars, to like give parents enough time to leave the theater. One of them was actually done by a USC graduate student. And let me get the name of it. I think Once Upon a Line is what it was called.
Yeah.
And it's one that should have been nominated for the Oscar, even though I haven't seen all the animated shorts yet. But I think it was really cute, really fun. I would love to like actually interview this animator because it was a fun little short and very like very charming. And I wish it was nominated for the Oscar.
Interesting.
But yeah, that's why I saw some good stuff. And hope I was actually surprised they showed the shorts at the Bama Theater in Tuscaloosa.
Really?
And I was very surprised by that.
Like, it is kind of surprising.
They have like Tuesday night art house at Bama Theater, and they usually show like certain movies that Tuscaloosa wouldn't get. Like right. When I was going to school, they would show like the new Woody Allen movie. I think they showed like All Is Lost. They showed like the foreign language films. If you get to see them in Tuscaloosa on the big screen, it's at the Bama Theater. And so I was very surprised that the Oscar shorts were there, and they showed them animation and live action, I think back to back is what it was. And interesting. I was like, wow, Tuscaloosa stepping it up. Cause like they got them the same week LA got them. And that's a rarity. So that's what I've been watching. So let's just delve into the Oscars. So they are coming up this Sunday. And so, Will, what do you think is the most interesting race that's happening with the Oscars right now? Like, what do you think is going to be the surprise category?
I'm going to go with Best Director.
Really? Okay.
And the reason I go Best Director is I think... I'm sure a lot of the chatter has been that we assume that La La Land's going to run away with most of these, right?
Yeah.
Or at least that seems to be the feeling. Mm-hmm. And that Damien Chazelle will get his Best Director Oscar for the movie. However, though, I wouldn't be surprised if someone else snuck in there, that might be the one that it doesn't pick up. I feel pretty confident that it'll probably win Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Emma Stone will probably win Best Actress. But I do think that the Best Director category might be the one they miss on.
That's interesting. Because that's one. Because Damien won the Best Director at the DGA. What's interesting? Because it could go to Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. That's always a possibility. I think that's like the second one behind Damien and La La Land. What I find interesting about this year is that even though there feels like there's a big front runner, nothing really feels locked to me. Like
right.
Nothing feels like they're going to win this one. I think it's like Emma Stone could Emma Stone could win, but also I don't think this will happen, but like Isabel Hubert, I believe she won the Golden Globe for Hubert. She won the Golden Globe for, I think, Best Actress in a Drama, but she wasn't nominated for Screen Actors Guild, and she's got a lot of nominations and wins from that movie. So it'll be interesting. I think La La Land's a lock for Best Picture, but that's what everyone's like. The critics are saying like, oh, it's gonna win. But I remember 2 years ago or whatever when they said Boyhood was a lock to win Best Picture, and everyone had no doubt in their mind Boyhood would win, except like me and a few friends, like I think Birdman's gonna win, and they were like, oh, it's gonna be Boyhood, and Boyhood didn't win. And I remember a lot of critics like being up in arms about that. But I don't think La La Land will, like, because it's tied for the most nominations ever. I don't think it will win the most Oscars ever, because they have to win 11 Oscars.
Right.
And if they do win that, in all honesty, I don't think it deserves that. Because when you look at the other categories that's nominated for, like with cinematography or editing, it'll probably win cinematography. I don't think it should win editing, because a lot of the stuff is winners, so it doesn't feel like there's that much editing. I feel like there's other movies in those categories. Like, I don't think it should win, like, it should win Best Sound Editing, because when it's going up against like Hacksaw Ridge or some big film with a lot of sound to it, I don't
right
think La La Land deserves that. I think that's just people voting for it because it's the big winner of the year.
Right. I would give sound editing to Arrival this year, honestly.
I still need to see Arrival, and I'm pissed at, I just rented it, so I'm going to watch it tonight, probably. Just
Arrival, Denis Villeneuve is my choice for best director. If I was going to pick a best director this year, I would go with Villeneuve. But again, if Chazelle loses, it'll probably be to the director of Moonlight. I wouldn't be surprised if Villeneuve sneaked that one in as a dark horse.
And going off that with Arrival, because it received like 9 nominations, I think. It received a great deal of nominations. How do you feel about Amy Adams not being nominated?
Well, here's the thing. I really enjoy Amy Adams. I thought she was excellent in Arrival. Would it have been nice to see her nominated? Sure. However, at the same time, though, I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they didn't nominate Amy Adams for Arrival, if that makes sense. Yeah. That I enjoyed her performance, but I also didn't believe that it was such a shocker that she didn't get nominated. Was it a snub? Okay. Sure. But was it one of those snubs like, oh my gosh, this is outrageous? I wouldn't go that far with this particular role.
Okay, fair enough. Is there... Going off or backtrack a little bit, the Oscar category that I think will be the surprising one will be Best Actor, because I'm torn of who I think should win, or who I want to win, because for one, Denzel Washington won the Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Actor, and SAG hasn't gotten that wrong. Like, if you won the SAG, you win the Oscar. The last time that happened was that when the person who won the SAG award who didn't win the Best Actor at the Oscars was like Johnny Depp for Pirates of the Caribbean. So it was like 2003. So you're like, well, since Denzel won, he should probably win Best Actor because he won the SAG award. But also the thing people have to realize is that Denzel had never won a SAG award before.
Right.
And so it could be, because sometimes the Screen Actors Guild do this, they give it to the
person. Your Lifetime Achievement Award.
Kind of your Lifetime Achievement Award. It's like, because when I re-reviewed American Gangster, Ruby Dee was nominated for an Oscar, and she won the Screen Actors Guild for Best Supporting Actress in American Gangster. And I'm like, she's good, but I don't know if she's like awards worthy. She has like one good scene, and she's only in like 5 or 6 scenes, and they're not really like big acting scenes.
Sure.
And so I think they gave it to her because it was like she was at the time like in her late 80s. So I don't know. I think because Casey Affleck took the BAFTAs and Denzel wasn't even nominated at the BAFTAs, I think that's the big surpriser. That'll be the surprising one. And I think it's between Casey and Denzel, but if people are riding that La La Land train, Ryan Gosling could somehow come up and like grab an Oscar. So yeah,
I would be very surprised.
I'll be very surprised. So you're thinking Denzel will win Best Actor?
I think so.
I hope so. I think Casey Affleck's great in Manchester by the Sea, but I think Denzel, I think that was his best role in a long time.
Yeah.
Might be arguably his best role ever. I think you shouldn't do this, but I feel like he had a great performance, and he was also the director behind it. He also was the producer behind it. Like, he made that film become what it was, and I think he deserves an Oscar for all the work he put into it. Because like it could have, like, I mean, sometimes you have these like play adaptations that don't do that well, or they're they're mixed. The reception is mixed. Like, I know, like, August Osage County, some people loved, some people really hated. And so it was a very mixed movie.
I didn't care for it.
Yeah, so it's... I enjoyed it. I think it has some great actors in it, but I understand the argument that it wasn't a good film. And so Fences, the only problem I think with Fences to me is that some people think it feels too much like a play and not enough like a move, like the movie. Or like a movie.
Sure.
And I saw the play when I did it on Broadway, and I think Denzel made a lot of great choices with changing it from theater to film. But yeah. So another thing too, going off of Amy Adams being snubbed, going back to that, Was there anyone this year that wasn't nominated that you think should have been nominated? Or should have been at least been talked about for a nomination?
So if there's anyone this year that I think that should have gotten a nomination that did not receive one, should have been Ben Foster for Hell or High Water. I thought that was a fantastic role. I noticed, of course, we have in that same film, we have Jeff Bridges getting a nomination. Jeff Bridges is great. I thought that Foster was just as good, if not better, than Bridges in that particular movie. So if there was a someone I was really surprised that didn't get a nomination, I was really surprised that Foster did not get one.
So would you, if you had, would you take Bridges out of the running and put Foster above him if you had to replace him with someone?
If you had to replace him, sure, I'd go with that. If you had the opportunity to say, I mean, because it's not even just a supporting role, it is kind of a lead role. You could, I would take Ryan Gosling out and put Foster in.
Ooh, that's a debate. So that the person, why Ryan Gosling? Why I think Ryan Gosling should be taken out?
Why Ryan Gosling? Of the others that are nominated, I think they're all incredibly solid. And as their leads, like it would be almost a shame for them not to be considered a quote unquote best actor for this year for those roles. I thought Ryan Gosling was very good. At the same time, though, I didn't feel like personally that his performance was that wow worthy for me to be like, oh my gosh, this guy is clearly one of the best actors this year.
I think with Ryan Gosling, I don't disagree. His character doesn't have a big wow factor to it. But I will say, in my opinion, he has one of the best moments in that entire movie is when, because I don't want to go into too much spoilers. When he's at the piano.
Yep.
And she walks into the place. When she walks into the club. That's heartbreaking. It's this long. It's this shot, and it just stays on him, and it just holds. And this is why the moments I like most about La La Land are the more quiet moments.
Right.
And it's that one and a different one with Emma Stone. But that one is my favorite moment in that entire movie because you see everything he's thinking, you understand everything he's thinking and what he's thinking about, and Damien Chazelle does a great job of holding on Gosling. And some of the hardest moments to act and some of the best moments to act are those silent ones. And so I think that, so I do agree he's not as big of a, it's not a huge acting role as say Emma Stone's is. But I think Gosling has some of the best moments in there. I can't comment on Viggo Mortensen for Captain Fantastic because I haven't seen it, but I do agree Ryan Gosling would probably be the first to go if I had to take someone out. And then in that same category, you have Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge. I know you also saw Silence.
Yes.
Do you think Garfield should be nominated for Hacksaw Ridge or Silence?
Silence, hands down.
Why?
He's on screen for 95% of the film. And there's not a single sour note in his entire performance. It is basically his movie, and the movie doesn't work without an actor, particularly a young actor, to show as much depth of feeling and sort of this. It's a very raw film. Again, it's so personal. It's one of the reasons why I think if there was another movie I would nominate for Best Picture this year, I would nominate Silence, and that's maybe a little bit of bias on my part. But at the same time, though, I thought it was unbelievably powerful and terrific film, and his performance in that, there's a lot of subtlety to it. You really see this growth in character and this falling into despair and the inner turmoil that he experiences. I haven't seen anyone else in a long time that could pull off all of those emotions and basically being tortured psychologically for the entirety of the film and not become either A, unbelievable, or B, boring.
So you think that's the biggest snub when it comes to a picture? Like, you think Silence should have garnered more nominations overall than just the one it got?
Yes.
And you think more so than any other film?
Yes.
I still need to see Silence. That's one I haven't been able to catch yet. To go back to the question of who I think was who I think should have got more talked about when it came to the nominations. I personally feel, and it was early in the year, and it was a studio like mainstream film, but I think John Goodman for 10 Cloverfield Lane should have been talked about in the Best Supporting Actor category.
I'll give you that. Yeah,
I think he was amazing, and I think it's a shame that man has never received an Oscar nomination for anything he's done. And I think that was the role that he deserved it the most on. Because, like, Goodman in the 90s was kind of, in the early 2000s, kind of known for playing, like, the happy, like, father figure or whatever. Like, he never played, like, this, or to my knowledge, he didn't play these dark villains.
Right.
He was always in the very happy, like, fluffy or goofy movies. Or I mean, he did play villains in, like, the Coen Brothers stuff, like in Barton Fink, or these, like, darker roles in, like, Barton Fink and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But he kind of played the goofy fool in certain things. Because, like, he did voices for Disney movies like Emperor's New Groove and Monsters, Inc. But, like, Cloverfield Lane was a dark role for him. And I think it was one of his best roles he's ever done. And it was, like, didn't get a sniff for any award nominations whatsoever. And I think he should have been talked about. And, I mean, he didn't even get a Golden Globe. Like, come on. You gotta get, like, give him a Golden Globe at least, a nomination for that. But yeah, it's I think, and that kind of goes off with the topic I wanted to kind of talk about as well with this episode, because 10 Cloverfield Lane's kind of the bigger, like, studio film. I read an article recently on moviepilot.com, and they can sometimes, some of their articles are hit and miss to me, but that someone posted one about The Dark Knight and about how Dark Knight kind of hurt the prestige of the Best Picture nomination because it forced them to add 10 nominations or whatever for Best Picture, because a lot of people kind of forget about this. Before, in like 08 or 09, Best Picture was only 5 nominations, and it was like that for 60 years. People had they hadn't nominated 10 movies since the 40s, and so some people argued that The Dark Knight kind of hurt the prestige of the Best Picture because they forced to add up to 10 nominations now. How do you feel about that? Do you think Dark Knight did that or what?
I think if you're looking for, I mean, the question comes down to, is there a specific cause for the change, or is there, are we looking for the correlation, or are we just looking for just something we kind of stick a timestamp to, right? So with Dark Knight, yes, it's a great film. Yes, it probably could have deserved a Best Picture nomination. I'm not sure, though, that their broader implication that it has, quote-unquote, lessened the prestige of the Best Picture winner sticks. And the reason for that being, what they basically just said is, because Dark Knight didn't get a nomination, and that broader fan bases complained that it didn't get a nomination, Hollywood decided, okay, to appease them, we're going to nominate more films. It's still not nominating The Dark Knight. You know what I mean? Yeah. That the problem was Dark Knight didn't get a nomination. Okay, well, in the future, we're going to add more nominees so we can add more nominees. But that wasn't the initial complaint. The initial complaint was not there weren't enough nominees. The initial complaint was there was no Dark Knight nomination. So when it comes to diminishing the value of Best Picture by having more nominees, I don't think so. Quite frankly, I think having more than 5 nominees in any given category is fine, Best Picture or otherwise. I think when we limit ourselves to just 5 choices, the debate becomes that much more difficult. Well, who do you leave holding the bag, you know? How many times have you seen folks like Tarantino and Scorsese and Spielberg left out of an award show because someone else had to be in, or someone else got left out because those guys had to be included? So the question becomes then, is the debate more valuable with more people? I would say it does. It makes the conversation more interesting, especially with the number of movies we have this year in terms of what is and isn't a Best Picture. I think this year's nominees have a very good mix overall. And again, maybe Silence and one or two other things you can make an argument for. They could have gotten a nomination as well. But I don't think anyone's displeased the nominees for Best Picture this year. I would go farther with that and say, like, last year, I think most of us agreed that we believed that Mad Max Fury Road was last year's best movie, hands down. The question would be, if there weren't five nominees last year, if there were not more than five nominees last year, would Mad Max have been included or not? Because it's one of those action films that Hollywood doesn't really seem to want to give credit to, so to speak, outside of box office numbers. So that would be the real question, is would have, if there were only five nominees, would Mad Max have made it on there last year? Or would Spotlight have made it on there? Because Spotlight, yeah, who ended up taking the whole thing, I didn't really think was best picture quality. But mm-hmm. it somehow wins the whole thing. So go figure.
Yeah, I think one thing, when they added the 10 nominations, I do think it was a Dark Knight forced the 10 nominations, because they're like, oh, we need to open it up to more people, to where... to where you're not like complaining about like, well, that person deserved to be over this. It's kind of like, to go to a football analogy, it's kind of like the college playoff in college football, is that you open it up to a certain amount, to from two teams to four, and then people complain about, well, it should be more than just four. Yeah. And I think
it should be eight.
That,
it should be 16.
It should be eight. It should be 8-16. And it's the same with Best Picture, is that once you open up 10, they're like, well, I think you need to open up a little bit more. And I'm not entirely sure about that. Because another thing in the article on Movie Pilot, it talks about, even though they did that, you still didn't see things like Dark Knight Rises or The Avengers or those type of big budget box office movies get nominated. So it really didn't help all that much in that category. What right. it does do is it does give some of those smaller films that couldn't compete money-wise, because people don't realize, or what you should know, is that studios spend millions and millions of dollars to get a nomination for the Oscars. I mean, it's just yep. like an election. You have to go out and campaign. The more times you campaign, the more likely you'll get an Oscar nomination. You're putting all this money into it. So it's harder when it's five nominees for that, like, A24 movie or the smaller independent company to get that movie into the top five. And so I think right. opening up to 10 allows that to happen. Because, like, would Moonlight have gotten in 7 years ago or 10 years ago through A24? I don't know, because they wouldn't have enough money to back it up. Right. So you have to get your name out there. I think opening up to 10, you can kind of see a wide variety of movies. I think, like, this year, not as much, but you have, like, you kind of have a wide variety of, like, where they're coming from. Surprisingly, Paramount kind of is the big studio that has a good number of the movies, with Arrival and Fences, but it didn't produce Arrival. It bought Arrival, I think, at Cannes, I believe. Cannes or Venice. But I think it opens it up to a couple of things. And so another thing, too, I want to go off of, going off that topic, James Cameron, director of Avatar, Titanic, and all that stuff, he recently complained, but he talked about what the Oscars should do in order to help with their falling ratings each year. He says, let me read it off for you. There have been a few times throughout the history of the Oscars where a wildly popular film was well received, but your typical year, the Academy takes the position of, it's our duty to tell the great unwashed what they should be watching, and they don't reward the films that people really want to see, that they're paying their money to go see, and they're telling them, yeah, you think you like that, but you should be liking this instead. And as long as the Academy sees that as their duty, don't expect high ratings. Expect a good show and do that duty, but don't whine about your ratings. Titanic was a very unusual case. I'm not saying it's a better film than films before or after, or it was necessarily a better year in general, but it was a film that made a boatload of money, and got a lot of nominations. The next time we see that, we'll see ratings go up. It's that simple. What are your thoughts on James Cameron's thoughts on this?
Actually, I'm going to use that as a springboard into a general conversation on the Oscars as a whole.
Yeah.
I personally believe that we give, and I'm guilty of it as well, and I've tried to train myself out of it. we give too much credit to Academy Awards in terms of what is and isn't quality, what is and isn't a good movie. Because we have to remember, at the end of the day, the Academy Awards, it's Hollywood rewarding itself. You know, they're putting on the production about and celebrating their own productions, their own work with their compatriots, their set of people, their industry. It's an industry rewarding itself. And so it's not like the United States Congress or someone voted on what we in the United States believe was the best movie this year. No, it's the film industry rewarding itself. So there is a certain level of self-congratulation involved.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a little bit of taking oneself a little too seriously in award season, especially when it comes to the Academy. Hollywood Foreign Press with Golden Globes, I don't really care as much because, again, that one's already kind of silly and they don't really take themselves too seriously, it seems like. But the one that everyone seems to care about is the Oscars. At the end of the day, we have to always remember that we are still – it's still Hollywood giving itself little golden statues. And with that being said, there isn't supposed to be a debate between, oh, like he said, what should you be watching, you idiotic, unwashed masses, versus what you are watching. Mm-hmm. I think Hollywood knows very well what we are and aren't watching based on their box office returns. So saying that the award season is the final verdict on what you should and shouldn't be watching is quite frankly silly. Because if that were the case, then you wouldn't be making Fast and the Furious 15 in 5 years. So will those movies ever pick up an Academy Award? Maybe, if they're particularly awesome or very, very good and have something interesting about them. But at the same time, Hollywood wouldn't be interested in making quote-unquote prestige pictures purely for themselves if they didn't think people were going to go see them. So the reason we even call them prestige picks is not only because they're good and that they're trying to win awards, but there's also something about them that we say, you know what, I can see why this is a movie that can quote-unquote stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do think that Hollywood sometimes goes a little overboard in their self-congratulation and trying to understand what they are. At the end of the day, we're talking about an industry that makes entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's what you do. We like to play pretend. We like to create stories. We like to tell stories, and it's valuable. It's a great thing. At the end of the day, though, if I'm not going to get too upset if Star Wars doesn't win a Best Picture or doesn't get a Best Picture nomination because something else got one instead. It's not going to affect my enjoyment of the movies. It's also not going to determine my opinion on what was and wasn't a good movie that year. Because I do think that when you're trained in film criticism or literary criticism or anything, if you have two eyes to see and you have a brain and you can think, I think you can determine what is and isn't a good movie. And you don't need Hollywood to tell you what is and isn't.
I agree. Because I think the conversation came when talking about Deadpool, because Deadpool is kind of that one that was on the cusp of getting a nomination, and it had both critical and financial success. Because it scored at the DGA with like Best First Time Director with Tim Miller. It was nominated for Best Picture at the PGA, and it was also nominated, I think, it was nominated at the BAFTAs as well. Let me see. But it was one that I think it could have been that kind of Dark Knight in a way, where it carried over in the critical sense and not just financial stuff.
Right.
Do you think if that would have happened, would it have legitimized the superhero genre even more? Like, would Deadpool getting nominated have helped superheroes movies and like those big budget films get looked at more than they usually do?
I'm going to say no. That's because I just people's prejudices aren't going to be changed by who won an award.
But nominated. If they were actually kind of invited to the party in a way.
Okay, so I'll go the same line of thinking then. Even if you're nominated to the party, it's not going to change people's ideas or prejudices on a movie. Or on a genre, or on a particular director, or on an actor, or a group of actors. I don't think the award season does that. I think we like to fool ourselves or tell ourselves that it does change perceptions. And I think you see this a lot with the way Hollywood especially talks about itself when it comes to award season and, you know, giving people the credit that they deserve for their work when they don't normally get credit. Well, that's all well and good, but they don't do it consistently across the board, which is why I never really take them seriously when they say things like that. So in terms of giving credit to the superhero genre, I mean, who are we giving it credit to? From the Hollywood types themselves, from the critics? I mean, as a partial non-professional critic myself, I give superhero movies a lot of credit if they're well done. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I give a lot of criticism to prestige flicks that I think are just literally going for Oscar bait. I mean, that's why I call certain movies Oscar bait movies. Like Theory of Everything mm-hmm. A few years ago was Oscar bait, like written all over it. And despite whatever anyone thinks about that movie, and I have some strong opinions on that, especially considering that Eddie Redmayne winning Best Actor that year kind of infuriated me a little bit, that Michael Keaton, I thought, deserved it more. That's neither here nor there. In terms of bringing respectability to superhero franchises or to superhero movies, I think that's just going to come back to how elitist does Hollywood feel about itself and how honest do they want to be. If Deadpool got a nomination, if I believe it probably could have gotten a nomination, it got it because it deserved it, not because we believed, oh, but by nominating it, it'll quiet down the quote-unquote fanboys that we don't give their movies enough credit.
Mm-hmm. But do you think it would have helped with their ratings, which is what Cameron's saying?
No.
You don't think it would have?
No. I think the first thing they need to think of on their ratings is their show is way too damn long. When you have a 3.5-hour program that bleeds into four, I mean, when it starts at around 6 o'clock Central Time in Alabama, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, and sometimes runs to almost 11 o'clock or midnight in both locations, no one wants to stay up that late for an award show. Really, the award show could take all of an hour and a half, 2 hours if they wanted to. You could cut out a lot of the stuff that they do. I know it's televisions; they have to sell. Advertising and things like that. I'm not even talking about that part of it. I'm just talking about the show's own running time, where everyone gets up and makes a speech for X amount of time. And they think that, oh, if we limit the speeches, that'll cut down the running time. No. How about all of your showcases you're doing constantly? Maybe just cut down on that. Because if you're tuning into the Academy Awards, it usually means that, A, you know the movies that have already been nominated for the most part. So we don't have to show 30-second clips of every movie for every category that's been nominated. Like if you've got the list, that's on the audience then to figure out. You know, you don't have to say, like in sports, go back and say, well, you know, they got here by winning in week two when they had to have an elite fourth quarter comeback. You don't have to make it interesting in art, all right? Art can stand on its own. You don't have to build drama. I don't think you have to build drama into these award seasons. It's like, okay, this year where our nominees are XXXXX and the winner is... Congratulations, you come up on stage, we clap for you, you give your little thank you speech, you sit back down, next. All right, that's how you do an award show. No one wants to sit around for 3.5 hours in a tux and just waiting for the after party, especially when, as we've seen with your best supporting actor category being the first one out the gate, I don't know why they stay. When you're done, just get out of there. That show takes forever.
Well, to go off, because I'll defend why they kind of talk about the movies and the certain movies. I don't think they do it for this reason. I think this helps it, or hopefully it does, is that sometimes, like Moonlight, for example, that's not a movie that gained a lot of mainstream appeal during its run. So I feel like by doing that, someone could learn more about that movie and hopefully seek it out after the Oscars. The same with Hell or High Water or Lion or Manchester by the Sea, because I mean, both, like all four of those movies have less than $50 million at the box office. Moonlight, who is like the second one behind La La Land, kind of in the conversation, has the least amount of money at the box office than any other nominee in the category this year. And right. So I feel like if you talk about it with that, I think I do agree that it's done too long and they add stuff that it rambles on. It feels like some of the comedy bits I do with the host sometimes, like, okay, we got it, let's move on. And they go 5 extra minutes. But I feel like that's fine with showcasing the movies that are nominated. I it could cut down a little bit. But I also have taken, even though I get tired of it, I have to take into account that not all of America or the world has sometimes not heard of these movies. And the only time they heard of them is through watching the show. So,
sure.
That's kind of my argument with that, yeah.
Absolutely, and I get that. Uh-huh. But we're also coming back to, you know, they want eyeballs, right? They want viewership.
Yes.
And they're, yeah. And it seems like the viewership that they're concerned with, at least from what James Cameron's comments were, was your regular Joe Blow, middle America, you know, quote unquote Trump's America, right? Those are the people they want watching, apparently. And if that is the case, it's not that they're not watching because the movies they like aren't being nominated. I think the fact that they're also not watching, too, is that they just don't really like Hollywood people in general. And so it's going to be
especially
hard to kind of change
year.
That perception. Right.
Especially,
it's going to be very hard to change that perception. And because if the expectation is that whenever Meryl Streep gets another nomination, which she always does, and if she ever wins an award, she's going to get up and make a political speech, that's just going to turn off half the audience, right? And so if it comes down to that, too, I think you can play that in with the NFL's declining ratings this year as well. I think a lot of people are like, we like the NFL. We enjoy football. We would prefer it if you didn't talk about other things beyond the football games. It's just going to make some people mad. Granted, you can't really account for that overall. I mean, you can't really limit people's ability to make speeches when they have their moment in the sun. But I don't think you can also discount the fact that their actions will also lead into an impact viewership ratings.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I agree. I don't want to get into politics that much, but I do think I see a lot of people from Alabama who are on my Facebook who are just like, I'm boycotting Hollywood entirely. Which is BS because you can't really boycott Hollywood entirely nowadays.
Right.
Anytime you turn on the TV and you watch something of narrative, like that's not the news, and even then, that's not the news. You're buying into that system, and so
right.
it's so stupid, and you have these conspiracy theories about Lady Gaga being Satan for her halftime show, like it's just crazy stuff. Anyway, but no, I agree. Is that I feel like nominating Deadpool, you bring up a good point, but nominating Deadpool, I don't think would help gain the people they're trying to gain because a lot of them just now want to cut off entirely from the Oscar, from Hollywood because of the political climate nowadays is that because
right.
I have people in my family who are like, well, I just want them to talk about the movies and not talk about how they feel about other things.
Right.
And I get that. I understand that. But at the end of the day, it's free speech and we can't completely get rid of that.
Right.
But
and we should.
No,
but
no, we should.
But they also, but like we always say, you do have to be aware though on the back end that if you are looking for more eyeballs, the more controversial you are, usually the less people are going to want to watch your stuff.
I agree. And it's kind of going off political speeches. And one thing that Hollywood sometimes does is that I think they can alienate viewers from watching unknowingly. And by that, to kind of going off that, Trevor Noah brought up a good point after Meryl Streep's speech at the Golden Globes. And he talked about, I love the speech, it's great, but you did this one thing that you probably shouldn't have done. And she's like, if you get rid of art, what are you going to have people do? Go watch MMA or football? And Trevor Noah's like, you can't diss someone's thing when you're trying to like praise your thing. He's like, that's like the opposite of what you should be doing. He's like, you can't, like, I can go watch football and then go watch the Golden Globes. I mean...
Yep.
There's so many people, you can't cut someone off. And I think sometimes, not all the time, I don't like getting political with this, but sometimes Hollywood can forget that you can be both. You can be a huge sports fan and love going to see Moonlight or whatever. And I think they can forget about who's watching their stuff. And I think that's one of the biggest problems that Hollywood can have sometimes. But let me get back to where I was at. So you think their ratings would help if they didn't make it 3.5 to 4 hours long?
Yes.
I don't disagree.
I used to love to watch the Oscars, but now, like, I'm tired. I've got to get up in the morning. I got work. I can't stay up that late on a Sunday night. Guys, I got to have to call out sick today. Oh, why is that? I stayed up watching the Oscars last night.
It's
not the Super Bowl. You know, like, I know Hollywood thinks it's their own Super Bowl, but at the same time, though, it's not like there's going to be something massive that I'm going to miss if I just turn on the television or or open up the internet tomorrow morning. Oh, so that's who won the Oscars, you know? So I'm not missing something that's quote-unquote truly exciting, you know what I mean? I don't think Hollywood wants to make the Oscars exciting either, because that could get you into some really weird stuff, and I don't think they want to do that either. I'm not criticizing them for playing safe. I'm criticizing them for not knowing at the end of the day that their event isn't must-watch TV
anymore. It isn't anymore.
Right.
It used to be. Has potential to be. I think internet kind of, and going off that thing, is I think the Oscars don't really know how to get that audience. And I think one of the best times they've done it in the past few years is when Ellen was the host of the Oscars. I think when the skits that she did with the pizza and the selfie, I think that brought the Oscars down, like, to the country's view or whatever. It wasn't all like, this is all glamorous, like, we're going to talk politics, we're going to talk this, we're not going to, like, show you who we really are. And I think Ellen kind of took the seriousness a little bit out of the event, and you got to see Meryl Streep, like, with a slice of pizza from the pizza place in West Hollywood or whatever. Or then the next year you have, like, DiCaprio and Kate Winslet devouring Girl Scout cookies. Like, I think those are the moments that are fun, and I think the Oscars Hollywood needs to focus on that if they want to get the audience back in. Because I think now, with the way social media is and everything, I think there's less privacy, like, that the actors or whoever have. And so the perception of them has changed in the public's view. So now, used to be you didn't know about politics, you didn't know about this. And now, because of how everyone's open about certain things, you can become divisive without meaning to become divisive, if that makes sense. But to go off to with Hollywood, and you're, at one point you said awarding itself, one thing I found interesting looking back on it is the past, like, 5 years, a lot of the, and including this year, the winner or potential winner deals with Hollywood or entertainment in some way.
Yep.
For Best Picture. Because in 2011, you have The Artist. 2012, you have Argo, which dealt with people faking to make a movie and how Hollywood had a hand in bringing to help in the mission that they were doing. And then you had Birdman 2 years ago. And this year you have La La Land, which is kind of this praise for old Hollywood. Yeah. How do you feel about the Oscars doing that? Do you think that's, like, do you think those movies all deserved it? Is it just a trend that has no merit? Or, like, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm not particularly bothered when Hollywood favors movies that make itself look good. I think that could be expected of really any group. You want to make yourself look great, you know? So when Disney makes Saving Mr. Banks, they're not going to give you the real story of how the writer of Mary Poppins absolutely hated the Mary Poppins movie and left crying for the movie theater and swore she'd never work with Walt Disney again. They're not going to tell you that story, right? They don't make themselves look good. So the difference, though, between that and this, other than the obvious, you know, whitewashing of one's history, is that I'm not surprised that Hollywood is more willing to avoid controversy when it comes to how it gives out its awards. Because, again, they're awarding themselves, and birds of a feather do tend to flock together, and most of Hollywood seems to have its own sort of group think when it comes to a lot of things, and there's not a lot of bucking the trend of the group think and making your friends look bad That's why everyone got mad at Ricky Gervais for being funny a couple years ago at the Golden Globes when he was, you know, basically insulting everyone in the room. And there's so many shocked gasps. I thought it was hilarious because when you're funny, you're funny. Mm-hmm. And but it apparently bothered Hollywood types. So when it, in terms of it being a negative trend, I don't see it being a negative thing. I do think, though, that by knowing how Hollywood thinks and acts, and they do like to sort of reward themselves, or at least reward movies that are deal with what they do on a daily basis, I do think it makes it easy to understand how they kind of vote on things and when it comes to award season. If you go in knowing, well, they tend to like movies that are not overly controversial, aren't going to cause a lot of big stir in terms of the dailies in the morning or from the news, but they will definitely pick the movie about show business because they're in show business. They love show business. I would expect any if there was a – I know there probably is. If there was like a Catholic organization that gave out awards for movies every year, I would expect Silence to get a lot of awards from them this year because Silence is a predominantly Catholic movie. So I can't fault Hollywood for basically operating the same way as any group would operate when it comes to giving the awards out for their particular group of people.
But, yeah, I think – and I don't think all the ones that have won are like terrible choices. I think Birdman should have won the year it came out 2 years ago. I think the year Argo came out, you could debate it shouldn't have won that year, depending on your favorite movie. Because that year you had like Amour, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django, Les Mis, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings, Zero Dark Thirty. That you could argue who should have won. I think the year before, people would argue more because it was The Artist, and even though I really liked The Artist, it was going up against some movies that I think hold up more today than The Artist does. Because that was the year of The Descendants, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, which shouldn't have won, The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, The Tree of Life, and War Horse. I think there's a couple of films in there that are like you could debate that should have won instead of The Artist. I think Anna made a good comparison earlier about La La Land to The Artist. I think La La Land will hold up more than The Artist has, because I think La La Land has a more mainstream appeal to it, and I think that's because of who they have in it, because the people who are in The Artist are great actors, but they're not Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling, big, and the La La Land has a little bit more spectacle to it than The Artist did. But yeah, I think Thomas, because I'll bring him into this because he's mentioned it before. He's like, I'm fine with whoever wins this year. Like, there's not really a movie and this is the same for me, that I've watched this year that I'm like, I'm gonna be so upset if that wins. I think there's just a lot of good movies that are nominated this year.
Right.
I don't think there's a masterpiece amongst the group and like everything else is below it. I think they're all fairly deserving of Best Picture. So going into that, let's be quick on who we think's going to win come Oscar night. Let's see. Let's bring the nominations up. So Best Picture is fairly simple. Who do you think's going to win that one?
I think it's going to be La La Land.
Okay. Same. And then for Best Director, are you going with Damien Chazelle or are you going with Denis?
I'm gonna go with Damien. I do think that just because of the momentum that La La Land's got, and that it's a relatively inoffensive film, and just all the buzz around it, I'm gonna go with Damien.
Okay. And then I'll do the same. Best Actor, you have Denzel, right?
Yep.
I want Denzel to win so bad, but I think it's gonna be Casey Affleck.
Really?
And I won't make my decision until probably the day of the Oscars on that one. Right now I'm gonna go with Denzel. I think that's gonna be the surprise category though. I think Casey could easily win it. Denzel could easily win it, or you could for some reason have someone come up out of nowhere and win it as well. I think actress is going to Emma Stone for La La Land.
Agreed.
I think Viola Davis I swear to God, if that woman does not win the Oscar for Fences, I don't know what will happen to me. She's amazing in that role, and I think there's all great actors. I hadn't seen Lion yet with Nicole Kidman, but I think Naomi Harris in Moonlight's phenomenal. Octavia Spencer's good, but I don't see her winning the Oscar for it. Michelle Williams is good in Manchester by the Sea, but I don't think she has enough scenes in that movie to give her the edge over Viola. And arguably, Viola should be probably nominated for Best Lead Actress in that movie, because she's pretty much the lead. Yeah, they wanted to run her for Best Supporting Actress, I think, because she wouldn't have to campaign as much, is what it was. That was the rumor.
Interesting.
For Best Supporting Actor, who are you going with?
Who did I pick? I'm trying to remember who I picked here. Let me see. I think it was Mahershala Ali.
Yeah, that's my pick as well. I think he's phenomenal. He's not in it that much, but he's so great in that movie. His character's profession as like a drug dealer, he's able to play that character in such a, it's not in a negative way. It's like drug dealers can become these like stereotypical characters you put in movies, and especially movies that center around like African-American culture. And he's still a person, and it's also like you can tell this is a character that went into this not really by choice but by his surroundings and what he grew up in. This is kind of all he knew, but just because he did this doesn't make him a terrible human being. He has some of the best moments in that movie come from his character in the first like half hour. I think he's phenomenal, and I hope he gets a lot of great roles after this movie. I think I just watched Nocturnal Animals as well, and Michael Shannon's really damn good in that movie.
I still need to see that.
I'm not surprised he was nominated for an Oscar, but he wasn't nominated for a lot of awards before this, before the Oscars. This is kind of his first big nomination, but he's phenomenal. So yeah, I think the big winner will be La La Land. How many awards do you think La La Land will win? That's going to be like the predictions will do. Like football scores. Yeah. How many think La La Land's going to win?
Best picture, best director, best actress, best original screenplay, best score, best original song. I'm going to go six. I'm going to say six.
I'll go at with least seven.
Six. Okay. Seven? Okay. You can add editing? At least six.
I'll say seven. I don't know which ones will win, but I'm going to say seven, and I wouldn't be surprised if it got upwards to 10. Just because if they're riding that train. I do think, though, it's key. I don't think it's locked for Best Original Screenplay. I think that could swing to Manchester by the Sea. And so that's one thing I would look at for that one. I will say if La La Land doesn't win Best Original Screenplay, I think that's the first time since Titanic that the Best Picture... Best Picture nominee was lost for a screenplay. I actually don't know you're right. Titanic, I think, was the last movie nominated for that won Best Picture that wasn't nominated for one of the Best Screenplay awards. And I think La La Land has a lot of similar traits that Titanic does. Don't worry, an article is coming soon on that. but there are some interesting trends between the two, or interesting similarities between the two movies, and why Hollywood's kind of fallen in love with La La Land the same way they fell in love with Titanic when Titanic came out. So yeah, I'll go with seven. You're going with six. How do you think Jimmy Kimmel's going to do as the host?
He'll be fine. Okay. I think Jimmy will be Jimmy. And uh-huh. I think if people don't know what Jimmy's going to do at this point, I haven't paid attention to who Jimmy Kimmel is for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. Jimmy is, in the terms of the late night guys, is the guy that closest reminds me to sort of a Dave Letterman type. He's the smartest guy in the room, you know, and he's good at being sort of deprecating and sarcastic, but he's also not going to step on your toes unless you're just making a total ass of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in that regard, especially since they've been asking for it for years because they always go on his show after the Oscars are over.
Yeah.
That it just makes sense to basically do your show live during the Oscars. So I think he'll be fine.
I think he's still doing his show after the Oscars.
So he's pulling double duty then.
kind of, is what I heard. The big question is how big will Matt Damon play a role in how big of a role Matt Damon will play in the Oscar night, because he is nominated for Best Picture for Manchester by the Sea, and you got Jimmy Kimmel who's doing the Oscars, and Matt Damon is an Oscar nominee for that night.
That could be interesting.
It could be fun. So stay tuned.
There'll be a lot of
Matt Damon
jokes there. Yeah,
there'll probably be a lot of Matt Damon jokes. So we will see. Go ahead.
How much you want to bet that they use by the end of the night they make up from their ongoing joke from the last 6 years of them hating each other?
Oh no, I thought it's been longer than 6 years.
It's probably longer than that, but it's been a while.
It's like their feud. When did their feud start? So we can get this right. 11 years is how long it's been going on. That's pretty damn good. Like, and they continue. They do it so well. For 11 straight years, they've been continuing that feud, and I think the pinnacle moment will be Oscar night 2017 between Jimmy Kimmel and Matt Damon. It'll be great. So what are your recommendations for listeners?
Things to watch, things to do right now.
Things to watch, things to do, things to read, things to listen to.
Things to read, things to listen to. Recently, I mean, last time I talked about my last recommendation was I've been getting into 30 Rock of late. Mm-hmm. The one thing I'd probably recommend for folks right now, there's a book out. If you're a fan of Neil Gaiman, he's a great fantasy writer and comic book contributor for years and years and years. But he's recently just released his version of retelling of classic Norse mythology, and it's just called Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman. It's great if you love Norse mythology, if you find mythology interesting at all. This is just Neil Gaiman retelling Norse mythology in book format for current generations, and I think it's great. If you're looking for something to read that's interesting, but it's also about storytelling and interesting storytelling and sort of how we get a lot of our stories today. A lot of that comes from myth, and I think this would be a great one for folks to read.
Okay, cool. My recommendation is a little web series. I'll post it in the show notes. It's Solace for the Unloved. Katie Featherston, who came on the show about a year ago now, it feels like. She was in Paranormal Activity and did some of the sequels afterwards. She came on the show about a year ago, and I interviewed her. And I met her by working on this web series she made. She just released it this past week on Valentine's Day. And it's very short. I think it's like 20 episodes, and they're all like a minute long. It was fun to help be, or it was fun to be a part of it. And I think Katie did a great job with it. And I hope you all can check it out. We'll post it in the show notes. Very quick. You can go through the episodes like within like half an hour probably.
That's cool.
And like we shot it, and like it was very low budget, but it was a fun thing to do. And Katie was very gracious with her time when she came on the show, and like I went to her apartment and like interviewed her for an hour with like all of her pets running around the apartment. But yeah, make sure you guys check that out. Check out Will's book, and we'll send me a link, and we'll post the link of it, like Amazon link or whatever,
sure,
in the show notes. So also, guys, make sure you like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Cinenation Show. Make sure you follow us on Medium. It's growing consistently every single day, and we have a lot of great writers on there. And if you're interested in writing for us, we'd love to read your stuff. We're really surprised at how successful that's gotten, and we hope you guys can check out some of the stuff we do. The other thing, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, give us a rating that, and write us a little review. That'll take a minute of your time. That'd be great. It helps us, to hear what you guys have to say about the show and what we can change, what you like, what you don't like, anything, and it's very beneficial to us, and hopefully that will help other people get involved in the show when they read your review. And I hope you all enjoy the Oscars this upcoming weekend. Bye.